And we're holding on Samach Beis Amud Beis, the second to last line. And we're in the middle of discussing the dinim of ribis. Now, in the Mishnah, we said like this. You have, of course, ribis d'oraisa, the plain, what we usually think of as ribis. I'm lending you $100. You're going to pay me back $100 plus something else. That's ribis d'oraisa. Then we said in the Mishnah, there are various kinds of ribis d'rabbanan, and the Mishnah had given an example involving a sale. So the Mishnah described a case where Reuven goes and buys wheat from Shimon at the current market rate, which is where a kor, which is 30 saw, is selling for one gold dinar, which is 25 silver dinarim. So in other words, each saw is worth a little less than a dinar. He didn't actually pick up the merchandise at the time on the face of it. Later on, he comes to pick it up. And later on, the price of wheat goes up. It's now 30 dinar for this consignment of a quarter. So now it's one dinar per saw. So he says, I want to pick up my wheat and I want to go resell it to somebody else at the higher price. The other guy tells him, instead of me giving you the wheat, how about let's consider, I owe you in effect 30. So fine, I owe you 30 saw of wheat. So at the rate of one saw per dinar. So now, how about then, that equals 30 dinar at the current market rates. So instead, I'll offer you 30 dinarim worth of wine. Actually, the original guy says, Reuven says, you know, I want to sell the wheat. I want to use it to buy wine. Listen, if you want to buy wine anyway, why bother taking your wheat from my storehouse and going and buying wine and going and trading it for wine? Instead, I'll trade you for the wine. The problem is, the Mishnah says, "V'yayin ein loy," he doesn't actually have wine at present. So now we're in the middle of trying to, the Gemara is in the middle of trying to figure out, the implication is that if he had wine, it would be, the implication is that because he doesn't have wine is a problem. The thing is, so this kind of thing to make contracts on that for something that you don't currently have is a problem of ribis, because it comes out eventually you're giving him something extra because you prepaid him. In this case, he started by prepaying him the 25 dinarim, and now later on he's going to be giving him 30 dinarim worth of merchandise instead. Now, one of the exceptions where such a thing is allowed is called yeshloi, where he has that commodity on hand, because then, in effect, we can say he could have given it to him right now. Therefore, when he didn't, even though he didn't actually give it to him, they didn't do mashicha or anything, we can still consider as though it's already his. It actually makes the point that once he paid him money, there was already mishapara involved. As we learned in the previous perek, other rishonim hold the fact that there's mishapara is not really the key point. But anyway, the point is, the yesh loy is one of those exceptions to the rule where such a thing is allowed. Now, the Mishnah had said ein loy, he doesn't have wine, but there's another kind of situation where it's allowed, namely what's called yotza hashar, where there's a known fixed price in the market for this kind of commodity, where that fixed price is expected to last for a good, nice amount of time. And then also, we say that's also, then you're also allowed to enter into such a contract. And it's not considered to be ribis, even drabanan, on the theory that, after all, because there was a prevailing price, it would be very easy now to go and actually buy the merchandise right now and give it to him. So you're choosing not to do that. You mutually agree between you that you'll deliver it later in the season, but you could have bought it now at the prevailing price, and therefore there's not a problem if you didn't actually do that, and instead you're going to give him later. So now the question is, in the Mishnah, we're talking about Yotze HaShar. There is a prevailing price. So there is a known fixed price for wine. So what's the problem of Ein Loy? Why does the Mishnah insist that Shimon has to have the actual wine in his possession in order for this to work and not be ribis, rather than relying on Yotze HaShar? So the Gemara had gone through a couple of possibilities. First, Rabba had tried to say that there's a difference maybe whether money is actually changing hands right now. You want to use the heter of Yotze HaShar. Rabba is arguing, based on a braisa, that there has to actually be money changing hands right now, that you could conceivably go and buy that commodity in the market right now. The problem with that is, the Gemara says that Abaya pointed out that doesn't really fit with the words of our Mishnah. So very well, the braisa may be saying that you can't do that unless you have money changing hands. It's called Isorei Habal. It's called So the Braisa may hold that without that you can't do this, but the Mishnah obviously is not, so that doesn't work. Then the Gemara had tried saying that there's a situation over here where the Mishnah actually begins in the middle of the story, and it started with that there was a loan. When we say that Reuven came to pick up the wheat, what we really mean is to pick up the value of the wheat that he was previously owed that amount of money by Shimon. But then Rava pointed out that also doesn't really fit with the words of the Mishnah. So that doesn't work. So now we're up to the second to last line of Samach Beis on the Beis. So Ella Omar Rava. So Rava says, let me explain what's going on over here. But first, by way of introduction, Rava says, I want to tell you, Kishivna, when I pass away, Rab Oshia Nofak Lavasi. I am sure that Rab Oshia, the early Tana, early Amora, is going to come out to greet me, because I regularly explain Mishnayos in accordance with his Braises. Rab Oshia and Rab Chia together had collected a collection of Braises, which we know as the Tesefta. Rab Oshia had various collections of Braises. This Braise that we're going to quote comes from one of them. And Rava says, I regularly do that. Whenever there's a difficulty understanding a Mishnah, I always look at Rab Oshia's Braises to understand what's going on. And therefore, I'm sure that Rab Oshia is going to be very happy with me in the Olam HaEmes and come out to greet. What does the Braise say? The Tani Rab Oshia, Haresha Hoya Nosha B'Chaveri Mona. You have a case where it starts out similar to the previous answer that the Mishnah is picking up in the middle of the story. The story was that Reuven was previously owed a mona by Shimon, 100 zuz. So he went to stand by Shimon's granary to collect his debt. And he says, "Tenli ma'osai, give me my money." Shani writes a likach ben chitin. I want to use the money that you owe me. I want to take that money and go buy a money's worth of wheat. In the Mishnah, it's not a money; it's a different figure, but obviously the same principle applies. Va'omer loy, and Shimon says, "Chitin yeshli shani noisimach. I have wheat. I would be able to give that to you." So fine. Save our son alive. Kashav shalach. Let's go and figure out how much the wheat is worth at the current price. And whatever that amount is, I'll say, yes, that amount of wheat now belongs to you. And if the price goes up later, then that's fine. It's already is considered to belong to you. And you can collect that amount. So in other words, we'll say, for example, the money at current rates will buy at the money at current rates. Let's say we'll buy 100 pounds of wheat. So he's saying, fine. Then in that case, there's 100 pounds of wheat that are going to belong to you. And later on, if that 100 pounds is worth not $1,000 but $1,200, then fine, you've made yourself a profit. So all that's fine because again, yesh loy, he has the wheat right now. And this is Rashi points out, you know, before we had in the first when the Gemara had gone through our Mishnah and Rabbah had brought a braisa that it works only if isorei habal yodai, only if money is actually changing hands at that time. Rab Oshia obviously disagrees with that because in this case over here, no money is changing hands right now. Shimon had previously owed Reuven this money. So he gives man chitin limkor. Eventually it comes time to sell the wheat because eventually the price of wheat has gone up. Omar loy. So now Reuven says, ten li chitin. Okay, give me my wheat. Chani roitza lamorchon velikach behen yayin. Now that wheat is worth $1,200 instead of $1,000, I want to go and sell them and buy wine with them. I want to buy $1,200. So I want to use that to buy wine. And the other guy says, you don't need to go and buy wine from somebody else. I have that amount of wine which I can sell you. Save our son alike, a shayu shalachav. So let's go figure out how much it's worth at the current market values. And again, same thing then. We'll figure out how many barrels of wine you're going to get. He gives man yain, and he does that, and he agrees to that, and fine. Now he owns X amount of wine in Shimon's storehouse. He gives man yayin limko. Eventually the wine goes up in price and it's time to sell. Omalai. So he tells him, he says, give me my wine. Now I want to sell it and I want to buy oil with it, because now it's the price, now it's the season to buy oil cheaply. And he says, Shemin Yeshli Shani Noisimacha, I have oil that I can give you. So let's go figure out how much it's worth at the current prices. So you have like this, and you know, but you shouldn't think, by the way, that we're talking about any kind of scam or anything over here. We're talking about, this is, you know, these are genuine business deals. These, you know, they both mutually agree, and they know that Reuven knows that Shimon is good for whatever it is that he's going to offer him. You know, nowadays you have a lot of stock transactions. You hear about various kinds of things on the stock market, futures and options and derivatives and all kinds of fancy things like that, also based on this kind of thing. You have some place at the bottom of it all is actual merchandise, but you have they're really buying and selling on the future value of something rather than an actual item of merchandise that neither the buyer nor the seller of a stock is ever going to actually see the merchandise, but they know it's out there. So here it's somewhat similar. Anyway, so Rav Oshia says, Kulam, with all of these transactions, one after the other, im yesh loy mutter, if at each time during all these series of transactions, if Shimon each time has the actual commodity, mutter, then it would be allowed. We're not concerned about the Isore Habala Yode business, because we can say that since he has it, Yesh Loi, right now, we don't care whether money is actually changing hands. Right now, already, Reuven is already owning this item. Even now, Rashi points out again that it's considered, at least it's in his Rashus, in the sense of, that there is Mishapara involved. As we learned in the previous period, if at any time after that Shimon wanted to back out of the deal and say, you know what, I'll go sell my wheat or my wine or what have you to somebody else, or if Reuven wants to back out of the deal, either one, they'd go to Beis Din and there'd be this whole Mishapara ceremony. So that's enough for it to be considered that it's in Reuven's possession already now, and therefore when it goes up in value, then there's no ribis involved, because it's considered he bought an item and now it went up in value. That's according to Rashi. And the Hagoros HaGura points out the Rambam agrees. There are a number of Rishonim, the Ravid, and a number of other Rishonim who say it's not really a matter of Mishapara. They learn that no, there's a different reason why they learn. There's other reasons why it would be mutter when Yeshlo. It's not a matter of being Kone, but it's a different reason why it would work. If he has him yeshle mutter, ein loy osur, but if he doesn't have that commodity at that time, then that's no good, because if he gave him money, if there was ein loy, but at least he gave him money, then fine, he could conceivably go buy it right now. But when ein loy and there's no money changing hands right now, then there's a problem. Then it's very similar to ribs. And so Rava explains, based on all of this, so my lokach, when we say in our Mishnah that Reuven lokach chitim, that he bought wheat, what we really mean is lokach b'halva asay, what we mean is he bought it based on his loan. He had an outstanding loan that Shimon owed him, and now he's buying the wheat using that loan. Rashi actually says, though, that we should take out those words from the Gemara. Rashi says this is a mistaken understanding. The actual words of my lokach lokach b'halva asay is a mistake that somebody put in as a marginal note in the Gemara, trying to explain what's going on over there. And Rashi explains that no, it's not really. We don't even need to reinterpret the Mishnah at all on the base of it. Because Rashi learns, when it comes to the wheat of our Mishnah, to begin with, there was no issur. When we say in the Mishnah, lokach ebenu chitin, bedino zahav akur, Rashi learns that at that point, even though now Rava is saying there was a previous loan, when it comes to the wheat, if in fact it wouldn't matter whether yesh loy or ein loy, that would be fine. Only when we have the next stage in it, we're in the Mishnah, we're saying, I want the wheat. And the other guy says, no, instead we'll transform it into a purchase of wine, since anyway you want to buy wine. There the Mishnah says that if yesh loy, it's allowed, and ein loy, it's not. So Rashi explains over here that you don't need to say over here that lokach means anything different than what it normally means, that he's buying wheat. You don't have to say that he's buying it for his halva. Tosfos earlier actually explains that you can you can still reconcile what the Gemara is saying over here. It's not like Rashi is saying a pirush meshubash, and Tosfos really explains that actually it would be, even with the wheat, it would be also if you didn't actually have wheat on hand, and therefore that justifies what the Gemara is saying over here. Lokach lokach b'halva also. Okay, anyway, the point is Rav is saying that's what's going on over here in the Mishnah. So the Mishnah is in fact beginning in the middle of the story. So there was a loan there in the first place, but to begin with, what we have over here is he actually gave him money in order to buy wheat. So that's fine, because even though he doesn't have wheat now, Yotza Hashar, there's a known prevailing price, so therefore that's fine. Then later on, even if the wheat goes up in value, there's no problem of ribis, because it's considered already to be his. Later on, then when he wants to transform that into a debt of wine, then it's not going to work unless yeshloi. Okay, Omar Rava. So Rava says now that we have this braisa and now that we can use it to understand our Mishnah, Shmamina midrab Oshia Tlas. There are three dinim that we can derive from this braisa of Rav Oshia. Three chidushim. First of all, Shmamina d'mamidin milva al gabe peiros. The first thing is the main point that the braisa is telling us over here, that you're allowed to, you have a milva, you have an outstanding loan, and you're allowed to reestablish it on the basis of peiros. You have exactly that, where Shimon owes Reuven money from before, and was saying that now instead of paying me back in money, instead you're going to pay me back in X amount of peiros. And then those payrus will be yours even if later on they go up in value, and there's no problem of ribis with that. We don't say like the braisa that the Gemara had brought on that Rabbah had brought on Samach Beis Amad Beis, that would work only if he sore biyadoi, only if he actually gives him money at the time. It works even though here there's no actual money changing hands right now. It's fine because again there is yotza hashar. You have one or the other. Either you have yotza hashar or you have yeshloi, and either way works. That's the first thing we see from Rav Oshia's braisa, that not like that you don't need sore habol yodoi for this to work. The second thing was Shmamina Hudi Yeshloi, but we see it works only if Yeshloi, only if he actually has the commodity on hand now, as Rav Oshi had said, that he had said at the end of the Braisa, Kulon im Yeshloi Mutter Eimloi also, that it works only if Yeshloi. So we see that Rav Oshi is making that point. There is, by the way, a machlokas aposkim. Would it be, does he have to actually have the entire amount on hand, or is it enough that he has only some of it? The Ramah holds it might be enough even if he only has some of it. Many other achronim disagree with him and say that no, there are going to be cases, we're going to learn later on in the perek, where it's possible to have only some of the commodity, and that's fine, and it's good enough to avoid the problems of ribis, but a case like this, no, you need to have the actual full amount on hand. And the third thing, Rava says, Ushmamina isav l'drabyan. Mefoshim point out, I mean, on the face of it, this amounts to, this is just restating the previous thing. We said that you're allowed to make a milva depend on peiros instead, and that automatically, of course, implies that it has to be yeshloi, and now Rava is saying yeshloi as though it was a second chiddush. It's not really. It sounds like the same thing. So the Ritva explains that what Rava means in it with it is one of two things. First of all, Rava wants to stress exactly that only if yeshloi. Otherwise, you need isore abal yoder. You need actual money to change hands in order for it to work. Otherwise, you have a problem of ribis derabanan. Or the other possibility, the Ritva says, he means that only if he has everything that he has. So again, we just said there's machlokas rishonim. It's more than the Ramah and the other poskim. You have a machlokas rishonim actually on the subject, whether you need to have all of it or whether it's enough to have some of it. In particular, the Ritva points out, the Rambam holds you need to have all of the amount. You can't just have some of it, unlike, again, some other cases that we're going to learn later on in the Perek that involve other kinds of contracts on Peiros, where there it's enough to have only some of it. Here the Rambam learns, and many other Rishonim learn, that you have to have all of it. And the Ritva says that may be what Rava wants to point out, with the second point of Yotzel, of Yeshloi, that it requires that he has all of it in order for this to work. So that's the second Chiddush, Rava says. And the third one, Ushmamino Isel de Rabyan. The third thing is that we can derive from this Braisa is that what Rabbi is that we do accept the halacha, what Rabbi Yanai says. The Omer Rabbi Yanai, Mali Hein, Mali Dmeh. Rabbi Yanai says when it comes to when it comes to a deal like that, when a person is going to prepay for merchandise, for peiros or whatever, and later on the price goes up and he comes to collect the peiros, he's allowed to collect according to the current price. Rabbi Yanai says, "Mali hen, mali dmehen." What's the difference whether you're collecting the actual peiros or whether you're collecting the value of the peiros? Rabbi Yanai says it doesn't matter. There's no problem of ribis either way because and we see that from Rav Oshia's Braisa, because we see that he's saying that that when it comes time to sell the wine, he said, for example, when it comes time to sell the wheat, and he's saying we're going to transform it into a sale of wine, and we're going to transform the wine into oil, and so on and so forth. We see that that works, and each time he's allowed to get the new commodity, and there's no problem of ribis. Tosfos points out that the Rashbam learns that it would work only when we say mali hen, mali dmehen. It can't be actual coins, actual money. It would have to be some kind of commodity, for example, wine instead of wheat. Tosfos then continues that Rabbeinu Tam disagrees and says it would be fine, even money, according to Rabbi Yanai. So we see that. We see from Rav Oshia's Braisa that that is so. Once you made this contract in advance in a way which is mutter, to that you're buying things at the current price, when there's a yotza hashah, there's a prevailing price, later on you're going to be picking up the merchandise when it's appreciated in value, Rabbi Yanai says it would be fine for the other guy to give you the actual money back and not just the original payers. And we see that from Rav Oshia's Braisa. Now that's not so simple, the Gemara points out, to Itma, because in fact we have a machloka samuroyim on that point. Rav Omer Oisin Amona Beperus. Rav says that when it comes to making it, an Amona means exactly that, this kind of deal, not necessarily involving a loan, but in other words, that you're paying money in advance. For goods which are going to be delivered only later on, and he's going to give him it later on, and the deal is that he's going to give him this amount even if it goes up in value. So Rav says you are allowed to do that when it comes to payers. It's called amana, because basically what you're doing is you're trusting the other guy that he's not going to renege on the deal. The Ritva points out that if he were to renege on the deal, there wouldn't even be Mishapora, because he's not even buying something that's there right now. Here we're talking about he's paying in advance for payers that are going to grow and they're going to be delivered later on in the season. So it really depends. You have to have a good, strong trust between the two of them that he's actually going to come through, and he's not going to say later on, you know what, since I don't even have Mishapara, then I'm not going to bother. I'm going to go sell my payers to somebody else at the current higher price rather than to you at the original lower price that you paid for. So Rav says you're allowed to do that with payers. The ain oisin amona bedamim, but Rav says you can't do the same thing to do with payers in return for money, meaning, in other words, that you're going to say, I'm going to pay you money for X amount of payers according to the current price, and later on you're going to pay me in money, because there was money at the beginning and money at the end, and therefore it looks like ribis. It may not be ribis daraisa, but at least Rav says it would be ribis dirabonim. So according to Rav, the third chiddush that Rava had said from Rav Oshia's Braisa, wouldn't Rav would disagree with Rav Oshia on that. Rabbi Yanai Amo, Mali Hein, Mali Dmeyen, whereas Rabbi Yanai says there's no difference. Since there's no loan involved in the first place, it's in the form of a sale, actually. So therefore you can have, there's no difference at the end whether he pays him with the payers or whether he pays him with the money. Now, again, as Tosfos had said, the Rashbam holds, and also the Rosh agrees this way, that he would, you still can't have actual, even Rav Yana would agree, you can't have actual coins to be paid, but Rav Yana would say that you could give him other kind of payers, like in Rav Oshia's Braisa, of instead of wheat, or in the Mishnah, instead of wheat, there's going to be wine, instead of wine, there's going to be something else, etc. So the Rashbam holds, even Rav Yana is not going to allow you to give actual money. Rabbi Natan and a number of other Rishonim disagree, and say that you that according to Rabbi Yana, you would even be able to give him money. Okay. The Gemara says, Mesvi, and I have a contradiction in that case. In the Braisa we said before, we said Kulam, and in Rabbi Oshia's Braisa, we said Kulam, in Yeshloi Mutter, we said if Yeshloi, if he has the wheat or the wine or the whatever at the time, then it's Mutter. But otherwise not. So how can Rav say that? And we're saying Yeshloi Mutter. So therefore, how can Rav say that it would be usur to do this kind of thing with Paris? What's the difference? Why is Rav asking it now? Of course, we could simply say that Rav Oshia and Rav are disagreeing, but the Gemara would rather say maybe Rav is disagreeing on the particular detail that we said of Mali Hain Mali Dmehen, but the Gemara wants to assume that at least he would basically accept Rav Oshia's din. So the answer is Omer of Hun Omer Rab Bishem Moshach, because in fact, the Pnei Yeshua says really the Gemara could have asked on Rav from the Mishnah itself that when Yeshloi Mutter, but the Mishnah didn't actually say that it's Mutter when Yeshloi. The Mishnah had only said him Ein Loi Osir. So instead of bringing a diuk from there, the Pnei Yeshua explains the Gemara preferred to bring more clearly from Rav Oshia's Braisa, where Rav Oshia clearly says Yeshloi Mutter Ein Loi Osir. So how does that fit with what Rav is saying? So Amar Rav Huna Amar Rav Bishem Moshach, because you're talking about that when he lent him the money, and when they agreed to instead transform it into a sale of some kind of merchandise, he actually did meshicha. So now it's fully in his reshus. It's one thing if there hadn't been meshicha. We can talk about that. There's no, all there is mishapara. Maybe there isn't even mishapara yet. But where there was actual meshicha, then he was actually koine. He was actually fully koine. And now from then on, when the wheat goes up in value, it's already his and it's going up in his reshus. So that would be what. So Rav would explain that that's what the Braisa is talking about, where he did meshicha, and therefore because Yeshloi, there's an actual commodity, and they didn't just make a deal on it, but he actually did meshicha on it. Then therefore it would be fine. Okay, Tosfos deals with a detail in there that actually we don't literally mean necessarily that he would have to store up that particular wheat for them and pay the malva with it later. It would be fine even if he eats that wheat and pays him back with other wheat even when it goes up in price. Because Tosfos says here we're not talking about a meshicha literally to actually buy it. We're just talking about a meshicha that has the effect of making this kind of deal mutter. In other words, if we're talking about a meshicha that actually made it his, then if the other guy now eats that wheat, it would be stealing. But Tosfos is saying it's not necessarily so. Anyway, so Rav would understand the Braisa that way. Well, when I asked if you're talking about the meshicha, where would Rav Oshia even need to tell us what's the chiddush? Of course, if he did meshicha, then all of this would work. So the answer is no. Ella kagun sheyichad lekeren zavis. No, rather we can say there wasn't meshicha, but the loiva set aside a particular corner and designated a particular area of his warehouse that all the payers that are here are reserved for the malva. So that's good enough. That makes it good enough to be considered, even according to Rav, that now the payers are considered actually his, and therefore when they go up in price, then it's considered it's his, and they're going up in price in his reshus, and therefore there's no problem of ribs. So therefore, according to Rav, that would be what Rav Oshia's Braisa is talking about. So if there wasn't Yichud like Keren Zavis, if it was just that they had agreed that he's going to give him X amount of wheat, then Rav says that would be a problem. You can only have that. You can make a deal like that in advance. I'm prepaying you for the wheat, and later on you're going to deliver me X amount of wheat. That would work with the wheat itself. It wouldn't work transforming the sale of the wheat into something else, Rav says. But if yichud lo keren zavis, then that's fine, because now the wheat is considered already to be in his reshus to that extent, and therefore later on when they decide, you know what, instead of wheat, you'll take wine instead, then that's fine. It's considered the wheat was already in his reshus all this time. When it went up in value, it was already in his reshus. So the Braisa, in short, doesn't contradict what Rav is saying. Shmuel gives a different answer. Hamani, who is the Reb Oshia's Braisa like, is not necessarily, according to everybody, Reb Yehuda. The Braisa would be strictly according to the opinion of Reb Yehuda. Reb Yehuda holds that when you have, first of all, a case of ribis, which is only dirabanan, namely there was no loan in the first place, there's a sale, but conceivably there could be ribis, as in these kinds of cases where the commodity goes up in value, and then you have a problem, you prepaid him, and there could be a problem of ribis. Reb Yehuda holds that it's not also, if it's only tzad echad, meaning basically it's a 50-50 chance whether it's actually going to happen. The price might go up, but the price might not go up. So therefore, sort of Yehuda holds that such a thing is mutter. Tosfos points out, now even according to Yehuda, you would have to have, there is something that either the loiva or the malva could do in order to prevent there from being ribs. So take, for example, this example over here, where he's selling him payrus with a prepayment, then each of them has in their ability any time to prevent before the prices go up, I'm going to actually deliver you the payrus, and I'm going to accept delivery, that kind of thing. As opposed to, Tosfos points out, you have the case of saw b'saw, where you lend somebody a saw of wheat, and the deal is he's supposed to pay you back a saw. Well, that's a problem because if the saw of wheat goes up in value, then it comes out, you're paying him ribis. There you don't have, it's not really biyada. You can't prevent prices from going up or from going up. Whereas over here you have the ability to deliver the goods. So Rabbi Yehuda holds that kind of thing is not considered ribis. So therefore, in Rav Oshia's case, also you have it's only tzad echad because the price of wheat or wine or what have you may go up, it may not, and you have the ability at any time to just deliver the goods and have the whole thing done with, and therefore Rav Yehuda says that would be fine. So Rav Oshia's Braisa, says Shmuel, is according to that opinion. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, here's a different example of tzad echad beribis. Suppose that a person is owed a money by somebody else. So now what the loiva does is he makes his field into a conditional sale. In effect, basically, he's mortgaging the field for the debt. If I don't pay you by X date, then the field is going to belong to you. So bizman sha moicher echel peiros mutter, if during that time, until the field actually changes hands during the lifetime of the loan, if the seller, which is the loiva, continues to eat the peiros, then mutter, that's fine. Because then the malva is not getting anything extra. Lekeach echel peiros, but if the lekeach, which is the malva, is going to eat the peiros during that time, also, then it would be also because now he's getting something extra for his, And in particular, Rashi explains, if it becomes a sale is one thing. You can talk about you buy a field, you're entitled to the payrus of it. But here it's only a conditional sale. The other guy might end up paying him back. And then it comes out that there was a loan here all along and he was eating payrus aside from the loan that he's being paid back. And then you have ribs. So that's according to the Tanakhama. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm af bizman shalakeach echol peiros mutter. Rabbi Yehuda says it would be allowed even when the lakeach is eating the peiros. And he gives an example. Omer lahem Rabbi Yehuda, ma'ase b'baitus ben zunin. I can give you an example, an actual example. There was a fellow named Baitus ben zunin. We find him here and there throughout Shas. He was a balabas who lived in the times of Rem Gamliel. And we often find he was a frum balabas, and we often find that the Gemara will bring examples from what he did, because the Chachamim knew that that it was well known that everything he did was always with the approval of the Chachamim. He would never do any kind of business deal or anything like that without checking with the Chachamim first whether it's mutter. So a real erlich yid, a real erlich balabas. Anyway, so Rabbi Yehuda brings a proof from him. So Baitus Ben Zunin, Sha'asa Sadeo Mecher Apira Belozman Azariah, he made this kind of arrangement. He had with a loan and a conditional sale of a field. Rabbi Lozman Azariah was supervising it and approving what's going on over there. The Lekeach Echol Peres Haya, and the Lekeach was eating the Peres. So you see, says Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Lozman Azariah approved of it. So obviously there's no problem with Ribis. The other Chachamim answered him, "It's Misham Raya. You're bringing a proof from there. On the contrary, your information is incomplete or incorrect. It was the Lekeach, it was the Mocher that was eating the Peres all the time, and everybody agrees, of course, that then there's no problem. Now, are they arguing with Metzius who was actually eating the Peres?" The Ritva explains that no, what it is Rabbi Yehuda hadn't actually heard in that situation who was eating the Peres. He assumed that the Lekeach probably ate them, because that's usually how it is. when you sell a field, usually the Lekeach starts eating the Peres. So the Chacham are saying, we know for a fact that in this case, they did differently in order to avoid problems of ribs. They're not saying that Rabbi Lozman Azariah said it would be also the other way around, but they're saying that that this is how it was. The Moicha was eating the Peres, the Moicha, which is to say the Loiva, was eating the Peres, and therefore there was no problem to begin with of Ribis, and therefore, so in other words, not as though the Chacham was saying, if the Lekeach had said, you know what, I want to eat the Peres, then Rabbi Lozman Azariah would have had to tell him explicitly no, but that's just how they worked out the deal. So the Gemara says, "My binayu." What is the actual underlying machlokus between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda? So Amar Abaye, Tzadecha Beribis Ikar Binayu. Like we were just saying, Tzadecha Beribis. It's not 100% chance there's going to be Ribis over here. It really depends. Is he going to pay off the debt or is it not? So if he's going to pay off the debt, then it comes out that it comes out all along there was a loan over here, and then the other guy is getting Peris, which is Ribis. On the other hand, if it turns out that he doesn't pay off the debt, then it comes out that there was never real, then it comes out there was a sale here to begin with, and there's no problem with ribis. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is allowing it because it's sadeh, it's a 50-50 chance, and the Chachamim are saying it's also. So we see, in other words, from that, says that we can say that Rabbi Yehuda holds sadeh beribis motor. Rav Amar, Rav gives a different explanation. It's not a matter of sadeh beribis. It's a matter of when the loan is paid off, is the Malva going to return the value of all the Peres that he ate all this time? Even Rabbi Yehuda says Rava would allow it only if the Malva, when the loan is paid off, is going to return the value of the Peres. So Ribis Amanas Lahachzu Ikabinayu, Rava says the actual argument between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim would actually be not on Sadecha Beribis, but if it turns out that all along it was a loan, then he's actually going to give him back the value of the Peres that he ate. So then Rabbi Yehuda will allow it, but otherwise even Rabbi Yehuda is going to say that it's also. Tosfos deals with over here, so why would that be? Why would the Chachamim aser it? The fact is that when he comes to pay the loan and therefore get back his field, at that point the guy is going to figure out, okay, I ate X number of Peres and we're going to deduct it from the loan. And Tosfos says, you're right, the Chachamim would have no problem with that either. But the problem is, he might say, listen, you owe me X amount. You pay me back that whole amount. After that, we'll go and figure out what the situation is with the payers, and we'll adjust things on that basis. And that's no good. If to begin with, we were to say, look, I lent you $1,000. Over the time of this mecher, I've eaten $100. So very well, to begin with then, let's figure it out. In that case, you owe me only $900. So even the Chachamim would have no problem with that. That's what we're going to learn later on in the Perek. We're going to learn about similar concepts called Mashkanta with Nachyasa and whatever. We're going to talk about all that in a few blocks. But here we're talking about where he says, listen, $1,000 you owe me. You pay me the $1,000. After that, we'll talk about how much the payers were, and I'll reimburse you for that. So now the Chachamim are having a problem with that, because the Chum are considering that to begin with, you're collecting ribis, because you're collecting $1,000 plus the payrus that you already had gotten from before, whereas Rabbi Yehuda is saying that since you're going to return it, it's not a problem. So according to Rava, in other words, it's not really a matter of tzadech and beribis. It's a different, different consideration. Okay. Getting back to the point is anyway, according to Shmuel, we can say that they're arguing on tzadech and beribis, and again, he understands Rav Oshia's braisa at the top of the Amud to be talking about that, since it's only tzadech, it's not a certainty that there's going to be ribis involved over here, because he could well give him the wine now, or give him the wheat now, or give him the wine now, or whatever, rather than waiting until prices go up. Then Rav Yehuda would allow. Okay, now we mentioned before what Rav Yanai said, Mali Hein or Mali Dmeh. We had a case where you're paying in advance for payers and you're going to take delivery later on when prices are higher. And Rav Yanai is saying when you're actually given it, it doesn't have to be the actual original merchandise itself that you bought. It would be fine also if it was different merchandise, or maybe even according to Rabbeinu Tam, and according to Rabbeinu Tam, it would even be allowed to give him money. So now Rava says, let's derive something from that. Omar Rava, hashta to Omar Rav Yanai Mali Heinu Mali Dmehen. Now that Rav Yanai has said that you're able to do that, that you can make a deal because Yotza Hashar, we have a prevailing price, and you can use that as a basis for the deal, even though you don't have the payers right now, and you're paying him right now. And again, because Yotza Hashar, it works, because conceivably the other guy could take the money that you're giving him right now and go buy those actual payers. Had he bought those payers right now, then obviously it would be fine, because now those payers belong to you and we don't care that they go up in value. Therefore, Rav Yanai says it's good enough, even though he doesn't actually go and buy those payers right now, because he could have. And Rav Yanai says, therefore, Mali Hei Mali Dmehen, that it doesn't matter later on whether he gives him the actual commodity that he bought, or whether he gives him something else, or even if he gives him money back. So now Rava says we can say the other way around, Mali Hein Mali Dmehen Amrinan. Then we can say Mali Dmehen or Mali Hein Nami Amrinan. Then we can also say there's a flip side of it. We can also say that the original commodity and the money and another commodity are all the same thing. It would also be fine because Yotza Hashar, it would be fine whether he gives him the money itself or whether he gives him the payers. Either way, it would be fine for him to give the Rashi goes on and explains at some length over here. If he had the wheat available right now, then that would be fine. Because since he's giving him money instead, he could go buy wheat with it. That's why the whole concept of Yotza Hashar works in the first place. So Rava says it works both ways. It could be, it could work either way. And therefore, poskin al shar shebashuk ba'af b'she'en loy. Based on that, then you're able to make a deal based on the current price, even though he doesn't have that merchandise right now, because he's been given money and therefore he could conceivably go and buy those payers right now. Now Rashi points out, we learn this explicitly later in the Perek. We have a Mishnah that says Yotza Hashar Poskin. So what is Rava saying that we can learn that from Rav Yanai when we have that very clearly in the Mishnah? And so Rashi explains like this. You have like this. When it comes to prices, the price of, let's say, grain tends to fluctuate throughout the season, because you have the beginning of the harvest when people are, you can have even before the harvest that people are looking forward to, there's going to be a harvest, we expect it's going to be X amount, and therefore they start establishing a price for it. But that price can fluctuate, because as soon as the actual harvest starts, you never know, before the harvest there might be something that damages the crops or something. Eventually, the harvest is done. Now you have a price, but even that price doesn't last for very long, because again, the supply and demand. You have to see how much supply is there in the end. Once everybody finishes their harvest, we're going to know how much supply there is, and then we can figure out an idea of how much demand there's going to be, and figure out what the price is going to be. Eventually, you have Eventually you have where the people who have huge storehouses of wheat open them up. And when boats full of wheat come from point A to point B, at that point, now we have all the supply is available. It's very clear how much supply there is. And at that point, you have a price that tends to last the rest of the season. So Rashi explains later on, when we learn later on in the Perek, we're going to learn that there's a machlokas about that point. Is it good enough to rely on that initial price when the harvests are just finishing? Or do you have to wait until later on? Do you have to wait until a few weeks later when all the storehouses are being opened up and all the boats are coming delivering grain? And then, only then can you use Shaar Shebashuk. Only then can you use the market price as a basis for contracts. And there's an opinion that says that. So therefore, Rav has to point out that no, based on what Rav Yana is saying, you don't necessarily need that. It's fine to have, even when you have the smaller amounts of grain that are coming on the market. Donkey drivers, for example, which are the equivalent nowadays of truck drivers, are bringing individual shipments, individual consignments of grain. That's when, at a price is established for a while based on that. Then that's fine. You can already start going into contracts based on that, expecting that price is gonna last for a while, and it may go up later on, or it may go up or down later on. So Rashi explains that at some length over here that what Rava is saying you can derive from Rav Yana is that that's fine. You don't have to wait until all the supply is out there. And Rashi also goes on to explain, in other words, that like this, the word hain means the actual merchandise that you're paying for. The word dmehen means whatever it is that you're exchanging it for. So when you're paying off, then at that point, the money that's being paid off is really dmehen. It's not the payers themselves would actually be called hain. And instead, if you're going to give him money, then that would be called dmehen. Whereas at the beginning, it was the other way around. Dmehen meant the money, and hain, and at the beginning, hain meant the actual money, and dmehen meant what you're going to exchange them for. And now at the end, when it's actually paid off, then it comes out the other way around. So Rashi explains that's why Rava is flipping it around and saying mali hain, mali dmehen versus mali dmehen, mali hain. Because in other words, he's saying that it doesn't matter how it was, whether we're talking about giving money to begin with and payers are going to be delivered later on, or whether we're talking about the other way around. He said, I had previously bought from you X amount of payers, and the other guy is going to say, you know what, I'll give you back X amount of money instead, now that those payers are worth more. Either way, Rava is saying, based on what Rav Yana is saying, it would work. So the Gemara says, Eisveda Popovera Vona Breda Vishur Lerova. What about the Braisa that we had on Omen Aleph? They say Rapapa and Rapuna Breda Vishur said to Rava. We said on Omen Aleph, Kulam, Im Yeshloi Mutter, Im Einloi also. We said in all these cases, if he has, then it's Mutter, and if he doesn't have, it's also. So we don't say Mali Hein Mali Dmehen. You have to have Yeshloi. It's not enough that Yotze Hashar. So Rava answers them, Possum halva hochazvin. Because the difference is that Braisa is talking about where there was a loan to begin with. There was no money changing hands at that time. He previously owed him money, and now he's saying he wants to be, as we called it on Omer Aleph, Ma'midin al Gav Peiris. That we say we want to reestablish the loan. Ma'min Milva Gav Peiris, Rava had called it before. That was saying, you owe me X amount, so instead we're going to transform that into a transaction where you're going to owe me X amount of wheat instead. So there you have a problem, because there's no money changing hands right now. So it doesn't matter Yotza Hashar or not. You need Isore Biyada. You need actual money to change hands. Otherwise it's not going to work. Hochazvini. Here we're talking about there's no loan in the first place. He's actually buying something and giving him money right now. Well, therefore, we can say that there's no problem with that, because right now the other guy could go and buy the payers right now based on the existing price. It's true that later on in the season the price is going to change, but that's fine. There is enough of a fixed price now. This price may only last a few days, may only last a week or whatever, but that's good enough that he could conceivably go and be buying with that money right now, and therefore Rava says, therefore, that would be fine, and Mali Hein Mali Dmei. But you're right. If there was a halva involved rather than actual money changing hands, then you're right. It wouldn't work just based on yotza shar. You would need that. You would need yesh loy in order for it to work. Okay. So the Gemara continues. Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef de Amitavayu. Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef both explain my time Omer Rabbanan poskin al shar shebashuk. Why indeed did the Chachamim say that you can make a contract like that based on the prevailing price for Alpha Pisha Einloy, and it works even if the seller doesn't have the payers right now? Why don't we say that it should be considered? Why don't we say that it should be considered ribis because he doesn't have right now, and there was nothing for him to buy right now? The reason is the Omer Le, because in effect the seller can tell the buyer, your benefit that you're giving me later on the payers when they're worth more money, that might as well be taken and thrown on the thorns. In other words, you're not doing me any favors like this. You could argue. In other words, you could say you're doing me a favor. You could say you're doing me a favor, and in return for that, I should do you something extra. You're going to say that that you're doing me a favor. You're selling me at the current price, which is at a lower price, and later on I can gain from that because the price is going to go up later in the season, and therefore I'll be able to make a profit. The lakeach can say that's not really I'm not really benefiting. Maya, honestly, but what do you think that you're benefiting me? Ihavuli zuzi biadi. After all, if I didn't lend you the money, I could have gone to Hini or Shili, which are nearby towns near Pumbedissa, and I could have bought wheat cheaply over there, because after all, the farmers live over there. That's where the farms are, so therefore they're going to sell at a cheaper price because there's no middlemen involved over there. So I could have done that, and then I would have had the payers in my possession, and they'd go up in value in my possession. So therefore, even now, and so now what happens is I gave you the money. I lent you the money. Now you're giving me back wheat in accordance with the value of how much it was worth at the time of the loan. Then it's considered as though at the time when I lent you money, as if you right away went and bought wheat, and now it becomes mine. So in other words, he's saying there's no ago netter over here. It's not that I'm gaining something extra because I lent you the money, which in a few lines, Rav Nachman is going to summarize that the whole problem of ribis is ago netter, when you're getting something extra for waiting to get paid back. So like this, the malva is saying, don't think that actually I'm gaining something extra that I wouldn't have otherwise. Here, I'm lending you the money. But instead, I could have kept the money for myself. I could have gone to Hini and Shili and bought wheat at the current cheap price and made a profit on it that way. So therefore, when I'm going to make a profit through you, it's also not considered ribis, because all I'm getting is what I would have otherwise got by using my money myself. So that's what Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef say. Omale Abaya Rabbi Yosef, so Abaya asked Rabbi Yosef, well, how does that work? By that logic, you should be able to lend somebody a saw of wheat and be paid back a saw, even though the price has gone up in between. By the same logic, he could say, your favor might as well be thrown on the thorns. In other words, again, you're not doing me any favor. The Omer Le, because he can say, do you think that the wheat would have gotten spoiled in my storehouse? Rashi says two possibilities. Kadchi can mean that they would have started growing, that they would have gotten wet and rain would have started falling on them, and they'd start sprouting and getting ruined. Or the other possibility, kadchi, Rashi says, can mean heat. They would have gotten overheated and they would have gotten damaged. Either way, can he say the same thing? Instead of me, I lent you that saw of wheat. Why shouldn't you pay me back a saw? If I had kept that saw, then later on I'd be benefiting from the rise in value. Why shouldn't you pay me back a saw, even though it's risen in value? And yet we know you can't do that. So Abaye is asking of Yosef, so your logic that says that shkula tivosef doesn't seem to work. And again, Omalei, sort of Yosef answers similar to the way Rava answered a few lines earlier. Because there's a difference whether there's a loan involved or whether it's in the form of a sale. Where it's saw b'saw, you're lending out a saw of wheat, then you have, even when you're not gaining anything extra, It's true. You, if you had not lent that wheat out, you would have had it, and you would have appreciated in value in your possession. But nevertheless, the Chachamim consider it ribs. But hocha here, when we're talking about making a contract not involving a halva, zvini, then it's as a sale. And again, he's giving him money right now, so therefore that's fine. And he can say shkula tivosach v'shad yachizri. You're not giving me anything extra that I wouldn't have otherwise had by going and buying the wheat and hini and shili myself. Omelet of Adabar Abba la Rava, but Rav Adabar Abba points out to Rava, how could you say that that in the case of a sale, he's not getting anything extra that he wouldn't have otherwise? He does gain. After all, wouldn't he have to give money to a middleman? If he went and bought the wheat and hini and shili himself, afterwards, in order to sell it, he would have to go and find a middleman to sell it. Now, like this, instead he's cutting out the middleman. He's dealing directly with the moicher. So he's gaining that he's not having to pay to, or he's not having to pay to the third party who would broker the deal. Omalei, so Rava says, you're right. You have to be talking about, in order for it to work, for it to not be a problem of ribis, you're right, it would have to be that the lekeach is paying the moicher the amount that he would have paid for a middleman. So therefore, he's not gaining anything that he wouldn't have otherwise if he went and did the deal in the usual way. Rav Ashi, Omar Rav Ashi says, you don't need that. Zuzi de inchi inhu abdi le safsirose. A person's money makes his brokerage for him. In other words, when people see that somebody has money to buy merchandise, then they don't need any middleman. They can just deal with him. They can just deal with him directly. People who come, the donkey drivers who come to town with grain, they're going to go right away and find the people who they know are offering money for grain and sell it to him directly and not need middlemen. So if he had the money, then they would have been able to bring him the payrus. He wouldn't even have to go to Hini and Shili himself. The donkey drivers, when they come to town, would bring him the payrus, and therefore you can say, I'm not gaining anything extra from the fact that I'm prepaying you. Okay. The Gemara continues. Rabbi Rabbi Yosef to Amitavayu. Here's another point that Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef both say, which is also relevant to these dinim. The din that they're going to say over here is going to be relevant to Misha Parah. Now, according to Rashi, that the whole point of why it works, of why Yeshloi works, is on the grounds of, because otherwise you would have to accept Misha Parah, then this next piece is very relevant over here. According to the Rishonim, we'll say it's not a matter of Misha Parah, but rather there are other considerations, and the Gemara is just bringing it here incidentally, because once we brought a din of Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef, then we'll bring another din of theirs, even though it's not as directly negeah. So Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef Dami Tavayu, Chai Man De Yohav Zuzi Atara Harifa. When a person is paying money for the uli market, meaning in other words, all you have yet is the uli price right after the harvest. So people are selling their individual harvests. You don't yet have an established market for grain because you don't have yet, like we said before, people haven't opened up those storehouses and boats aren't coming yet full of grain. Right now, all you have is individual farmers are selling their individual harvests. And maybe you have like one or two donkey drivers are coming through with it. So that time is called Tara Harifa. It's called the uli market. So it's not yet a fixed price, which is going to last for the season. So now, later on in the perek, we learn that, again, if yesh loy, then you're able to make a contract based on that. Because the fact that yesh loy is good enough, even though there's not a prevail, even though you don't have yet yotzah shah. So they say, when you're doing that, when you're paying based on this tara harifa, on this uli market, the lekeach actually has to go and be present at the granary where the grain is actually being threshed. So the Gemara asks Lamai, why should you need to do that? Elam mikna, is it in order to accomplish the kinyan? Why? Holy koni, he's anyway not making the kinyan anyway unless there's a mashicha. And if you're talking about that only if he actually is present there is there going to be Mishapara, why? And even if he didn't appear in person at the granary, there would still be Mishapara because he paid the money. And as we learned in the previous parak, then there's Mishapara. So what is it? Why are Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef saying that he actually has to be present there? And the answer is, we are saying he has to be there in order for Mishapara to come into the picture. But the point is like this. When a person pays like that early in the season, right after the harvest, when people are just selling their individual harvests, he doesn't just do that with one person. He goes around to several different farmers and gives them money so that this way he doesn't know which one he's going to end up buying from, which one is going to have the good grain. So he pays each one of them, and then eventually later on he'll decide which one he's going to actually buy from and which ones are going to reimburse him. So there's no smichus das yet. He's not certain which one he's going to actually end up buying from. Therefore, there's not necessarily mishapara. If he actually comes and visits the granary, then it shows that he's more certain that he's going to end up buying from this particular farmer. He's going to end up buying this particular crop. So they both know now that there's a smichus das, and therefore now, and then there's going to be mishapara. The Eloi, if not, if he didn't actually show up over there, Omalei, then the farmer, the seller, can tell him that, no, I wasn't even sure that you were going to buy by me. Amina, I figured, Ashkachas paid at Shapitaminidi, you probably found a better crop than mine, the Shaklas, and you bought them, and therefore I also decided to go and sell my crop to somebody else. I don't have to wait around until you decide, Dafka, to buy from me. So that's why they're saying that he has to actually be there in person in order that there should be that smichus das, in order that mishapara should come into the picture. Again, according to Rashi, this is relevant to the dinim of ribis. Only when mishapara is involved, only then do we say that such a thing is mutter and there's no problem of ribis. And if not, then not. According to the other rishonim, that wouldn't be an issue. Amar of Ashi, so Rav Ashi says, Hashta de Amrit Mishum Mismach Daita. Now that you're saying that the reason why he has to be there, as Rabbi and Rav Yosef is saying, is in order that there should be Smichos Das, well then Afilu, then it does, he doesn't even actually have to be there at the granary. There could be other ways where he demonstrates that he's certain that he's definitely going to do it. Ashkeche B'shuka, if he finds the farmer in the market, V'omalei Samcha Daita, and he says that, I'm relying on you. I plan to buy from you. Don't go sell it to anybody else. Then that would already be enough to trigger Mishapara if either one of them changes their mind. So getting back to Ribis, the Gemara says, Omer of Nachman, Kol Adi Ribis. So here's the general rule to understand whether something is Ribis. Kol Ago Netter Lay Oser. Whenever you have that he's paying something extra for the fact that the other guy is waiting to be paid, then osur, then that would be osur. So that applies. In other words, Rabbi Nachman is saying, it's not only when it comes to loans. The fact is, our Mishnah, for example, had talked about a case of a sale, and throughout our perek, we're going to be talking about cases involving sales. So yes, there are cases. So far, this whole daf, we've been talking about cases where it's not, where it's mutter, because yesh lawyer, because yotza ashar, or other considerations like that. But basically, whenever you have that he's gaining something extra for the fact that he's waiting to be paid back, osur, then that would be osur daraisa or darabonon, as the case may be. So an example of that would be, let's say you prepay for something where the other guy doesn't have it yet, and the other guy is giving you a discount because you're prepaying him. In fact, that kind of thing, you have many different dinim that come up from that. For example, they talk about, let's say, magazine subscriptions. Sometimes you have, for example, you know, you have, if you pay by the issue, then you're going to pay more. If you prepay for a year's subscription or 2 years subscription, then they'll do it at a discount. The post can discuss, how do you deal with that to avoid issues of ribis? And maybe there can be, there's a certain, that you can have, it's not just you, the subscriber, are gaining from it. You can say that if you can find a way, for example, the publisher is also gaining from it, for example, that their circulation numbers are up, and therefore therefore they can sell their ads at a higher price, then therefore that kind of thing would be mutter. We have all kinds of things like that. We have mice and b'chol yoim, and we have discounts for early payment, and you have to be very careful to avoid issues of ribis. The Amr of Nachman, and Rav Nachman says, here is an example. Haiman de Yoiv Zuzi Lekira. A person gives money in advance to a wax dealer. So again, the deal is he's going to give him the money now, and the guy is going to deliver the wax to him later in the season. V'ka'azli arba arba v'ka'azli arba arba v'ka'azli dalad dalad. Right now, the wax is selling at four cakes of wax for zuz. And the wax dealer tells him, Yehivna lach hey hey. Because you're prepaying me now, later on I'll give you a discount or I'll give you a bonus. I'll give you five cakes of wax for each of those. So Rav Nachman says, Isnu gabe shori. If the wax dealer has that amount of wax in stock, then good. Then again, because then we can consider that it's already his now and it's going up in value in his possession. Less new gabe also. And if he doesn't have the wax now, then it would be also. He was with you have the machloka, suppose him whether it's enough that he has some of the wax or whether he has to have all of it. Anyway, so the Gemara asks Pshita. Obviously, that's exactly what Rav Nachman is describing. That literally, ago neto. If he doesn't have the wax, then literally he's gaining something for waiting to be paid. So what's Rav Nachman's chiddush? And the answer is loy tzricha de istay ashroi b'mosa. The chiddush is that we talk about where the wax dealer himself has he himself has deals with other people in town. He himself has prepaid other wax dealers for wax, and he's waiting for delivery from them. So in other words, you have Reuven is buying from Shimon the wax dealer. Shimon himself already has. He doesn't have all the wax. He doesn't have the wax in stock right now, but he has other people in town who are supposed to be delivering him wax because he prepaid them. So, you would think that it's not a problem. Since Shimon is already owed wax by other people in town, maybe we should consider that like a case that we learned about briefly in the previous perek, and we're going to talk about later in our perek, that it's like a case of lending somebody something of, until my son comes back or until I find the key, meaning in other words, there it's considered. And there it's allowed because it's a short term thing and it's considered. In other words, he already has the item in his possession. He's just not able to get to it right now. So maybe we should consider that Shimon, the wax dealer, already has these cakes of wax in his possession because the other people owe them to him. Kamash Malon, therefore, Rav Nachman is telling him this is different. When you have actually Yovei Bnei Ensha Ad Shem Tzmachteach, means you have the item right now, it's just right now it's locked up in the safe or it's whatever, and you can't get to it at the moment. You have to find the key or your son has to come and open the combination or whatever. But here, he doesn't actually have the wax in his possession, Bechlal, Kibne Mechasri Guvaina. He still has to collect it from those other people. Kamanda Lesnehu Dami, therefore, it's not considered as though it exists in his Rishus. And therefore, this isn't going to work. And therefore, you have a problem of ago neter. And therefore, it's not going to be allowed to do such a thing.
Okay. But that's only if the price may change.
Right. Here we're talking about it's not a matter of prices may change. He's telling him to begin with, you're paying me at the rate of one zuz for every four cakes of wax. And because you're prepaying me, I'm going to do you a favor and I'm going to give you a bonus. I'm going to throw in a fifth cake of wax for free. So now we're saying, Rav Nachman is saying that if he actually has the wax in stock now, then fine, he can do that. But if not, then not. That would be similar, in other words, similar to the magazine subscriptions. You don't have the actual magazines for the year, haven't even been printed yet. Later on in the perek, we're going to learn about the details of these dinim, about when you're allowed and when you're not allowed to do such things. It basically depends how close is it to being ready. In this case, Rav Nachman is telling us because the wax dealer himself doesn't have that wax, he has to go collect it from the other people in town who owe it to him. Then you have a problem here of ago neto. You have a problem that in effect he's giving him something extra for the fact that the guy is waiting to get his delivery of his wax, and therefore that's a problem of ribis, says Rav Nachman.
Mm-hmm. What's Mishipara exactly? What is it? The meaning of Mishipara and
Mishipara, we learned in the previous paragraph that it means the one who paid back. We say that Hashem who punished the Dura Mabul and Dura Floga and various other villains in history is going to punish somebody who doesn't keep his word. So we learned in the previous paragraph, you have a case where Reuven has paid money for merchandise and hasn't done any kind of kinyan, hasn't done mashicha or kinyan chotzer or what have you on it, if later on either he or the other guy wants to change their mind and back out of the deal, then they're going to be taken to Beis Din, and there's going to be a Misha Parah curse placed on them, saying that saying basically you can do this, you have the right in halacha to change your mind because the actual goods haven't changed hands yet. There's been no mashicha or anything. Nevertheless, though, Hashem is going to punish a person who does that, who acts dishonestly like that, and then the sale is undone. But in other words, it's a pretty serious thing to be given such a curse, and therefore people are not normally going to do that. So here we were saying before that, for example, when this prospective buyer goes around to a bunch of different farmers and prepays each of them, saying later on I'll decide which one I want to actually buy the crop from. So we're saying until he actually goes and makes it clear to one of them that he plans to actually buy from him, there's not even Misha Parah involved, because each one of them can say there's no smichus das over here. Yeah, he gave me money, but he gave money to a bunch of other farmers as well. That doesn't mean that I'm locked in with him. But once he goes to the granary, and as Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef said, or as Rabbi Ashi had said, he meets him in the street and tells him, I'm soymech on you, then at that point he's locked in with him, and now there would be Misha Parah.
Because he's going to renege on the other ones.
And if he reneges at that point, if either one of them reneges, if the one who gave the money says, you know what, I changed my mind and I decided I'm going to buy my wheat someplace else, or if the farmer changes his mind and says, you know what, why should I sell to you? Somebody else offered me money and I gave him the wheat instead. Either way, the other one can take him to Beis Din, and there's going to be Misha Parah involved. Yeah.
Yes, Shekhaya.
Welcome to you.
Shekhaya.
Yes.